Yesterday I gave you a brief sketch of the notion of stable domination for, in general, and in particular in the context of algebraically closed value fields. And today what I want to do is to say, is to talk about other notions of independence that we can define in an algebraically closed valued field. Now, I should say that since it's in the sorted language that we have elimination of imaginaries, all of these notions of independence should be defined for elements of all the sorts. Today I'll just talk about field elements, just as kind of keeping things a little clearer and keeping things a little bit simpler. So the idea of stable domination is that you have this very rich stable structure sitting inside the any algebraically closed valued field, and so you look at how that independence in that stable structure interacts with types over the field in general. The other notions of independence that we worked with are perhaps more naive, as to say, well, we understand independence in an algebraically closed field, so what would be, how can we work by analogy to move up to the valued field? But I think there are still useful notions, or maybe stable domination turns out to be what's really a more fundamental notion. And so it's worth kind of talking through them and looking at them and seeing how they compare with stable domination and what they might say in cases where for non-stably dominated types. So first of all, we have this notion of sequential independence. Which comes from thinking of a generic point in a variety in an algebraically closed field, a variety being somehow, sort of your basic definable set or positively definable set. In an algebraically closed valued field, then you have to include the valuation. So in one variable, the natural analogy would be to look at a ball. So we say what it means for a point to be, we say that a point is generic in a ball if it's over some parameters, if it's not in any smaller ball defined over those same parameters. And so we use that to write down a definition of independence. David wrote this down last time, but I'll just write it down again in a slightly different way. So if we have some parameters C, a subset of B, and suppose A is generic in a ball U, in a C definable ball U over C, then we say that A is generically independent from B over C if A remains generic in U over the additional parameters from B. And let me just pause for a second to say something about notation here. To say that talk about a ball U is not small u, it's somehow not very intuitive notation, so I'm going to say where it came from. We've got into all this by thinking about torsors, and the sorts that we needed to add were torsors, and so we called the torsors T for torsors, so that's my family of sorts T. And then of course, the lattices come before the torsors, so that's why they're called S. So an element of S should be a little S, and an element of a T should be a little T. So, and this reminds us that also these objects are elements of the structure, they're elements of the sort. So they are sets, of course, but they're also elements. So the small letters remind us that they're supposed to be elements as well as being sets. And if I want to talk about something which is either a T or an S, then I call it a U. So those things are called U's. And balls, of course, are either torsors or lattices, so they're called little U. Okay, so that maybe explains where that comes from. Okay, so this gives us a notion of generic independence for singletons, single elements. How do we list it to more variables? Well, if I'm talking about a variety, then it's easy. I mean, I just have a variety is defined by a polynomial and several variables. So what should be the n-dimensional version of a ball? Well, maybe it should be a lattice or a torsor, but that's somehow then difficult to see what it means to be generic in one of those. So instead we just said, let's just proceed sequentially. So we just wrote down a sequential definition of a notion of independence. So we say that a sequence of elements A1, A2, up to AN is generically independent or sequentially independent from B over C via, and I do have to say what my sequence of balls is, via sequence U1 through UN of balls, if the UI are definable over the algebraic closure of C, and for each I, AI is generic over the algebraic closure of B, C, and A1 through AI minus 1 is generic in UI. That's right. I really want to say them ahead of time. Yeah. Okay, so what does this look like? Let's just work over the empty set. Let's take A to be generic in a closed ball. Let's say evaluation rate. So this is really a picture that I drew last time, but let's just look at it again. So I have my tree here, 0, and I have the evaluation ring is everything of norm greater than or equal to 0, so this is the 0 of the value group. And then the evaluation ring is everything which branches off above 0 in the tree. To say that A is generic in the closed ball, well, it means in particular that A is not in any smaller ball, so it's not in the open ball at 0. So A is not an element of the maximal ideal. So that tells me that the value of A must be equal to 0. A has to branch off somewhere there. And if I have any other B from which A is independent, if A is generically independent from some point B, well, that means that the value of A minus B, B can't put A into a smaller ball, so the value of A minus B must also be equal to 0. So B would have to be something which sits over here, and not something which is in the same open ball as 0 as A itself. So that's to be generic in a closed ball. If A is generic in the open ball, well then, again, I have 0, I have the 0 of the value group. A is generic in M means that it has to be in particular in the open ball, so the value of A is strictly greater than 0, so it has to branch off somewhere over here. But if A is generically independent from B, then B can't tell me more about A. So in particular, B cannot lie down here. I have to have that the value of B is strictly greater than the value of A, is strictly greater than 0, so B would have to be something over here. Okay, in particular, we immediately see the lack of symmetry. A is generically independent from B, but B is not generically independent from A in this picture. Okay, and then I can also see this if I go up to the sequential independence. I've just dealt with singletons. If I take, say, B1 to be in the maximal ideal, B2 in 1 plus n, so branching off in the cone of about 1. So here's the 0 of the field, 0 of the group. There's 1 of the field. So I'm just taking B1 somewhere in the maximal ideal. I'm just going to stretch out the picture. I think of B1 as being generic, but anyway, just put it anywhere in there. And B2 somewhere over here. If I take A1 in M and take a generic over B1 and B2, a generically independent from B1 and B2 over the empty set, then A1 will be somewhere, say, here. Okay, it has to be generic over B1, so it has to be below B1. A2, let's take an A2, which is independent, so that the sequence A1, A2 is generically independent from B1, B2. G over the empty set. So that means that A2, A2, so I take A1 there. I want to take A2 actually in 1 plus M. That generic over A2, B1, A1, B1, and B2. So if it's in 1 plus M, so it branches from 1, but it branches, has to branch lower than anything else I know about from B1, B2, and A1, so it's going to be, say, down here. Then the way I've got everything set up, I have that the value of A2 minus B2, where these two branch from each other, has to be less than the value of A1 minus B1 to have that independence. So again, we see that this is yeah, I'm not saying this is sufficient, I'm just saying this is necessary, in particular, this is true. Which will tell us, in particular, that A2, A1, I can't switch over the order of A2 and A1. I don't have the genericity in this direction. Okay, so this sequential independence has things which go wrong just because it's defined sequentially, and you can't really expect things to work out that well with a sequential notion. On the other hand, it also has good properties. It has very, very useful properties that we can prove existence of we can extend generic types, and we get invariant types, the generic extension of invariant. So if I work over an algebraically closed base set and say take A to be the algebraic closure of C and A, and I didn't define independence for a set, just for a tuple, but we can make the obvious connection, and take M, a model which contains C, then there is A prime of the same type as A over C, such that A prime is generically independent from M, and then the type of A prime let me just do this for a sequence. So I'll just take A as a tuple. Then I can maybe infinite. But let's just keep it finite for a moment, just sort of. And then the type of A prime over M is odd M over C invariant. And so we get a reasonably nice notion from this sequential independence. On the other hand, we could look at.
Specialization, you write A was algebraic closure of C with a single element A or with a
tuple? No, with a tuple. So I wanted to define, I could define the algebraic closure of C and A being sequentially independent here. If I look, again look just at the algebraically closed field, I also can also look at the ideal of polynomials of a variety, and we have a notion, we can, the idea of independence which comes from there is also the same thing. And so we could look at that again in this context. In this case, we don't want to look at the ideal of polynomials which are zero in a variety, because we also have to, we still have to take the valuation into account. So we look at an ideal, so at least we look at a set of polynomials which are somehow natural with respect to the sense of the quantifier elimination. And it turns out that what we get is not an ideal, but a module of polynomials. So this gives us the idea of J independence. So we look at the set J. Of the type of A over C is defined to be a set of polynomials for which the type of A over C says that the value of f of x is greater than 0. So this is an R module, so it has
K
is the field.
Any parameters in that field.
Yeah.
And implies means just simply any solution satisfies it.
Right. Okay. Well, so then I can define a notion of independence, which is just says, well, what happens if I increase the parameters, does this module of polynomials change or not? So we say that A is independent from B over C in the sense of J if the type, if the the J polynomial, the J ideal, the J module of the type of A over C is equal to the J module of the type of A over B. For consistency, let me erase this. Okay, so A is a tuple here, not just a singleton. So we get a notion which is, you know, it's easy to understand what it means for tuples. It's naturally defined for tuples, not just for singletons. It's obvious that it's transitive, but it's not so obvious how to get any kind of existence results. And so it's just not it's really hard to get your hands on. So, you know, it kind of has nice features, but it also has problem features. So how do the two notions compare, the J independence and the G independence? Well, first of all, they're the same for singletons. For a singleton A in the field, we have that A is G independent from some set of parameters, if and only if it's J independent. And that's fairly easy to see. This isn't really going to be a proof, it's going to be a hand waving, but let me just say something about it. If A were not G independent from C, then that means that the type of A over B puts A into a smaller ball than C can. With parameters from B, I can put A into a smaller ball. Well, putting A into a smaller ball is the polynomial condition. So that's easy to see. You just write it down. So if type of A, if parameters from B put A into a smaller ball, this is the polynomial condition. linear polynomial. Okay, on the other hand, so that's that gives me this direction. On the other hand, if A is generically independent from B over C, then just think, what can the type of A over B, what can B say more about A than C already can? Well, the type of A over B, I can't say that A goes into some smaller ball because we have the generic independence. So all it can do is to say that A is not in a certain collection of balls. So if, again, in my picture, if I somehow know something about A that it lies in some ball, say it's generic in some ball, then all B can say about it is that it is not allowed into some other balls. Well, if looking at the type of, suppose we had some polynomial for which I have some polynomial f of x, I think of it as being factored, vi maybe, all right, because I'm in an algebraically closed field, I can do that. Then I want to know, can it possibly be the case that this polynomial is in, that over B, this polynomial has norm less than value greater than zero, but over C it doesn't. Well, if I allow my ball to range, if I allow my A also to range in these particular balls, all that can happen is that the value of f of x gets smaller. I mean, it gets bigger. It can't get smaller. Because one of my roots is inside one of these balls, in which case I get closer to it. I possibly get closer to it, so the valuation goes up. Or else one of my roots is not inside the ball, in which case the valuation is constant on that ball. So in no way can I be forcing can the type of A over B force this polynomial to have smaller value. So what can I say? The value of f of x can only get larger if A ranges over a slightly larger set. So if the type of A over B forces the polynomial to have large valuation greater than zero, then the type of A over C will also. Okay, so that's somehow the picture that these things are. They're good notions. They coincide well if in one variable, but they don't coincide if we allow more than one variable. And we can see that in an example. Right, exactly. Yes. Okay, so maybe I don't need to do an example. That's just the observation. I mean, I can sort of put down an example, but that's right. I mean, J independence doesn't depend on the order of the variables, and G independence does. So they're not going to be equivalent. Of course, there's a little issue to make an example in which J independence holds but G independence fails, because you have to. The first example that I wrote down, where the G independence failed just because of the changing the order of the variables, J independence would fail also in that particular example. So there's a little bit of an issue. But just to make it work so that the J independence is actually holding. Okay, but in somehow the issue is that's coming up in every example that I wrote down where we see a lack of something G independence not depending on the order of the tuple or the two forms of independence not being equivalent, comes down to the fact that somehow the value group, there's some interaction with the value group. The example of something which is generic in the open bowl, the reason why I get the lack of symmetry is because I can say the difference because of some kind of interaction with a value group. So we'd like to see how we could try to avoid interaction with the value group. So to define a notion of orthogonality to the value group. So we say that the type of A over C is orthogonal to the value group if for all models M containing C, if A is generically independent from M over C, then the definable closure of MA in the value group is equal to the definable closure of M in the value group.
This goes back to your remark earlier, Zoe, that the definitions that UI should have included the AI.
Yeah, I think maybe that's right. I should have allowed the use to be definable. I have to start with a sequence for which they're generic in the appropriate use. Actually, the definition does depend on the use. All right, so.
It's a sequential independence is allowing sort of monotonicity on the left side, sort of should be implicitly.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can.
I mean, A is square.
Right. Okay, so the definition of orthogonality is to say, well, we need to assume some kind of independence of the model, so we take generic independence. And then it's to say that as you go up, putting in A doesn't allow the value group to grow. And then it turns out, the theorem, that this notion of orthogonality ties in very well to our sense of what it should mean to have a type which is sort of divided between its stable part in the residue field and the minimal part with the interaction with the value group, that the type of A over C is stably dominated if and only if it's orthogonal to gamma. No, this is ridiculous. That somehow what's the whole point is that we go up from singletons to tuples. Okay, well, just a kind of a word about the proof, not really sort of saying what the structure is, not really doing it. But so on one direction is not too hard. The other direction is pretty hard. If the type is stably dominated, well, then take a model which is generically independent from M, for which A is generically independent from M, and well, because of the stable domination, we know that there is a invariant extension of the type of A over C, and furthermore that it's unique, and so we can assume that we have, so P has a unique U over C invariant extension. And we can assume A is realizing this extension. So that's because of the theorem I stated last time about stable domination in general.
Just
use stable domination. To say that the type has an invariant and a unique invariant extension.
I'm sorry. Why does it have to be the generic extension?
Well, then the generic extension is. There's a generic heat extension,
and it's
invariant.
It is?
So yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so it has to be the same one. Okay, so then I can, because I'm in a situation where I have a type which is, has an ought you receive invariant extension, then I can list the parameters and to conclude that the type of A over M is stably dominated. Okay, now I can suppose I did increase the value group in this case. So suppose I have some gamma which is in the definable closure of MA in gamma. Well, since A, the type of A is stably dominated, and gamma is defined from A, then the type of gamma is also stably dominated. But I've got, it really is because I have something which is in the residue field. I mean, something which is in the value group, but a type is stably dominated, that's the only way that can happen. So it's really.
I know,
it's not really too obvious, but why? Well, just a little bit of, I mean, you have to do a little bit of work for like, filling around with things, but it's really, yeah. Okay, so in the other direction, well, basically we have a theorem which says that if we have certain hypotheses, then the type is stably dominated, and so the only thing to check is whether those hypotheses are satisfied. So those. The type of A over C is orthogonal to gamma. Well, really the issue is to get from knowing that the value group doesn't increase for any model which is independent to the fact, to knowing that the value group doesn't increase at all in any context. But so we just have to sort of move things around. I'm not quite sure what I want to say here, except that I'll say what I have written here. We'll see if it makes sense. So given a model M, we may suppose that A is independent from M over C. This just by moving, so we're in the right situation. So then, the type of A over C has an U over M, U over C, invariant extension. M, and of course we know by the hypothesis that gamma of MA, of the definable closure of MA in gamma, is the definable closure of M in gamma, ought you over C. M? I'm not sure. I think we'll have to be a little bit careful about where exactly these things are.
But you need to what? To something, right? To you, I guess.
Yes.
So that doesn't...
And then in this situation, if I have an all M over C invariant extension for which the value group doesn't increase, then we have a theorem which says that in that case we have stable domination. Okay, and then the corollary of this, of the orthogonality of the gamma being equivalent to stable domination, is that if we're in the case where we have stable orthogonality of the gamma, so assume the type of A over C is orthogonal to gamma, then generic independence is equivalent to just equivalent in the stable structure. So STC of A independent over C from STC of B. Sorry? And the same is true for J independent. So let me, but the it's not a corollary of this. We have to prove it separately. So separate theorem is that, again, assume the type of A over C is orthogonal to gamma, then J independence is equivalent to T independence, and so hence equivalent to stable domination. That's what I was saying. Okay, the argument for here is proving a kind of maximum modulus principle that the largest value, the smallest valuation that a polynomial attains is somehow on the boundary. So that's where the generic independence is lying. All right, well, that's all I wanted to say.